All right, we have 1 minute, so I'm going to go ahead and get started. I have a tendency to go over by like 2 or 3 minutes, so I'm going to try and start early and maybe work it all out. The session that you're in right now is connecting websites, Windows Azure websites, and your on-premise database or on-premise enterprise. The idea being, you have this website thing you want to put out on the web. You kind of want to dip your foot in the cloud pool just by getting your site online, but you know that you have some sort of business requirement or boss obsession or whatever the case may be, that you need to keep something in your on-premise environment. Maybe you have some data that you don't want to deploy out to the cloud. Maybe you have some sort of requirement that says you can't put stuff out there. Maybe there are pieces of your stuff that you can't put out there, whatever the case may be. There are a lot of cases in which you want to get your site online, and Windows Azure Websites is hands down the easiest way to do it. I've been doing web programming for about 15 years, and I've never seen anything this easy. When I heard about it, I was about 2 weeks into Microsoft, and they kind of showed me a picture of it, and I remember like laughing and saying, that's the missing link. That's what we need. We need to make it easy for web developers to get their stuff online. And so far, we've done a decent job of that with web roles and other stuff that we can do out there. But wow, the way this sounds to me, it sounds like that Lego piece that we don't have in Azure yet. So I was very excited to hear about it and started working on it right away. And I worked very closely with the engineering teams and some other teams responsible for the website's product. You might have heard an announcement during the keynote. Scott Guthrie announced that we have SSL on websites now. I can tell you that that is probably the greatest news I've heard since I joined Microsoft. I do a lot of talks like this. This is the first time I've actually given this talk. But the question that I get over and over again is, when are we going to have SSL? Guess what? I don't have to get that question anymore. It's a good day. So, going on. A couple of introductions. Kind of tell you who you're dealing with. My name is Brady Gaster. I am a Windows Azure technical evangelist. I live in Redmond, Washington. You can probably hear my accent and know that I'm not from Redmond, Washington. I am from the South. I'm originally from North Carolina. My Twitter handle, Brady Gaster, very creative username. It's also the best way to get in touch with me. BradyGaster.com is my blog. On my blog, I write about things like Windows Azure websites and SignalR and Web API. And those are also the topics that I generally tend to speak about. I also dabble in microcontrollers, but I'm not really good at it, so don't ask me to build your robot, okay? Or hack your Roomba, I can't do that. I have one wife, her name's Gina. I have two sons, Gabe and Lucas. I have two chihuahuas, Lola and Nico. If you think that chihuahuas are not for manly men, I wanna introduce you to this boxer named Mickey Rourke. You guys ever heard of Mickey Rourke? He had 7 of them. He took one of them to the Golden Globes and he accepted his Golden Globe for the wrestler. So the chihuahuas are not only for ladies, they're for manly men too. I have two guitars, neither of which I really get to play that much because I have one wife, two sons, and two chihuahuas. And again, I am originally from North Carolina, hence the funny accent. I only say it's funny because that's what people in Washington tell me. Okay. I feel at home here. All right, here is the general misconception. There is this wonderful man at Microsoft whose name is Nir Mashkowski. Nir is the kind of the guy behind Windows Azure websites. At least he's the PM of the team that builds kind of the bits that run websites. And I had a conversation with him one time, and he said, I want you to do a talk, and I want you to tell people that websites is not a toy. I want you to break down some of the myths that are coming up out there about websites and what it is. Everybody says this. It's for blogs and CMSs. It's for startups. All those Node guys can use it. All those PHP college students can use it. It's not really for enterprise stuff. It lacks on-premise integration, and it has no logging and monitoring. It doesn't have any of the capabilities that I'm accustomed to in my enterprise environment. Guess what? None of those things are legitimate. They're all false. Websites is not a toy. It's a tool, and it's a perfectly capable tool helping you build your enterprise. Okay, so I just want to point that out. You can actually do enterprise development starting off with websites. Okay? What do you think makes a platform enterprise-y? How many of you do enterprise development out there? Okay? Throw out some mantras of enterprise development. Give me something. Anybody? Okay, good. I've got a few. Distributed processing support. You guys agree that's a very important enterprise development requirement, right? Oh, we've got that. Okay. Vast storage capability. I need a SAN. I need a blah, blah. I need lots. I've got data, terabytes, whatever, petabytes. We got that. All right. Lebowski. Anybody a Lebowski fan? Awesome. Okay. Process integration. I don't want to tell my developers they have to learn how to do something new. Oh, my God, they're going to whine. No, they're not. We have that under control. Okay. It's all taken care of. Hoff's got you covered. Asynchronous messaging. Why do I need asynchronous messaging? Because sometimes my website's going to have a million visitors on it. Anybody ever heard of Woot.com? You guys buy Woot t-shirts? I have a few, 100. Okay, well, they have this thing called a Woot-off. Whenever they have a Woot-off, what happens? Their site starts to get really slow. They started implementing asynchronous messaging. They throw messages into a queue. They have a background worker process that runs. We have one of those, too. We've got that covered, too. All right? Last one, federated identity and access control. Probably heard recently of this thing called Windows Azure Active Directory, right? We've got you covered. Okay, so we've got all of those things. We can do all of those things on websites. How do we do these things on websites? Well, first one, distributed processing support. I need a back end, right? I've got to have something happening in the back end because I've got all these messages coming in. Got that covered by using what's called Windows Azure Cloud Services. From here on out, I'm going to drop the term Windows Azure. I'm a Windows Azure evangelist. Is it okay if I just make that implied from here on out? Okay. SQL and storage. No problems there. We have SQL. We have ClearDB for MySQL implementation. And we have this other thing called Windows Azure Storage. There I go again. Windows Azure Storage is going to support things like storage queues, which I'm going to show you today. It also has the concept of tables, so you can do tabular storage if you want to. And you can also store blobs. So you don't have to worry about putting your blobs into your SQL database and making your DBA have a heart attack anymore. Okay, you can put those up into your Windows Azure blobs now. We also support integration with TFS Online, with Git and GitHub, CodePlex Git, you name it. And we also support Mercurial from Bitbucket now. So that's your process integration story. We've got that taken care of. Your developers really won't have to change a whole lot about what they do. And Service Bus, which is where we're going to spend a good deal of time today. Where I'm going to concentrate a majority of our time today is in block one, block four, and block two. So the last one over there, asynchronous messaging, that's our service bus. And then you've got federated identity and access control. I'm not going to get too much into federated identity and access control today, but what I can tell you about that is with the introduction of Windows Azure Active Directory, you can actually do something like integrate your, you can basically do a dir sync between your on-premise AD and Windows Azure Active Directory and basically copy up whatever user data you need so that people can actually log in using their internal Office credentials. And it just hits the Windows Azure Active Directory and locks in. In addition to that, anybody use Office 365 at all? Okay, well, you can actually integrate with Office 365 so that you can authenticate against your O365 domain. So if you have 20, 30, 700 users in your O365 domain, you can actually set up integration between O365 and have them log in using those credentials automatically. Go ahead. You can't point it at your on-site ADFS, but you can set up a directory sync between your on-site and your Windows Azure Active Directory and do a sync, and then you can party. So you can do that. All right. So here's a scenario. We're talking about on-premise integration. A lot of us do enterprise development. We work with databases. We write SQL. We do Sprocs and blah, blah, blah. And, I mean, it's data pushing, right? It's not exactly exciting. So I wanted to kind of come up with an example that doesn't really adhere. Oops. Sorry. Should turn that off, huh? I didn't want to come up with an example that was like saving orders to the database or saving products back and forth and all that stuff. I wanted to come up with a kind of a scenario that we could walk through and build on it. I started thinking, what's a good on-premise story? What's a good on-premise situation? And I was kind of hungry when I was thinking about this. You can tell that happens a lot. So I started thinking about ordering pizza. Oh, I'm going to go to blah, blah, blah.com and order myself a pie. That's a perfect model for what I want to do here. Somebody goes online. They want to order a pizza. Theoretically, there's going to be multiple pizza parlors that are under that chain. So I'm going to want to know a couple of things. What do I have in my inventory? Do I have any pepperoni? Do I have any anchovies, et cetera, et cetera? So I'm going to want to integrate with my on-premise store environment. So maybe I want to figure out where the user's coming from. Hey, they're coming from New Orleans. I want to basically look at all the different pizza parlors in New Orleans in my chain and show them what they can order from based on what's closer to them. I'm not going to get into the geo stuff today. I will get into some geo stuff on Thursday during a web API talk if you want to come to that. But our situation is ordering pizza. So we've got an on-prem environment, your pizza parlor. Maybe you've got another on-prem environment. That's when we get into like N tier. That third environment is going to be like the central office, like where the orders get archived, like, you know, your database. So let's take JoJo's Pizza. I'm just making up a name here. JoJo's Pizza has 15 locations throughout the Southeast, and they also have a corporate office where they want to have a log of all the orders that ever take place, and they want to be able to control stuff in each one of those stores or see data in each one of those stores. And then the stores also have a couple of requirements too, i.e., they need to know what pizza you ordered. They don't want to send you an anchovy pizza if you order pepperoni. Make sense? Is this a cool demo? You guys like this idea? All right. Well, the first step is the easy step. JoJo's Pizza comes in. They go, cool, we need this website. We want to save orders to our database. Not too complicated. You've got to start simple. So I'm going to start with a simple demo. First demo is having a Windows Azure website that's going to save data to a database. Now, what I want to tell you is, the demos that I'm going to run, with the exception of the service bus stuff that I'm going to be showing you today, all those demos I'm going to be running locally. Reason for that, quite frankly, is sheer paranoia. Network problems happen, right? Everything that I can show you today until we get to the service bus stuff is all going to be happening locally on my computer. I've already deployed this stuff and tested it out in Azure. Everything works, not a problem. It's just an ASP.NET website, pretty much. So if you want me to deploy some of this stuff, I can do that, but the network gods are going to have to be friendly with us. Okay, so I'm going to point that out. So what I'm going to do here, I've got six demos that I'm going to start to walk through. And the first one is really just going to be the dirt simple one. Walk through that code real quick and just show you kind of what it looks like. Before I do that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you this database right here. I'm going to zoom in on this, and you can see that I've got a couple of tables here. I've got available ingredients, ingredient selections, pizza orders, pizzas, and sections. What's sections? My wife doesn't really like pepperoni. She likes ham and pineapple. So we always get our pizza split down the middle. So pizza has sections. Okay? Yeah, it's kind of obsessive. Go with me. Okay? So I've got all these tables. Not really complicated. Just to kind of show you what this looks like, if I do select all from the ingredient selections, it's not going to have anything in it yet because I haven't actually ordered any pizzas. But if I were to order pizzas, the ingredient selection is going to be the table in which I say, this section of this pizza has this ingredient on it. There's a second table in there, and that table is deleted. No big deal. That's what I meant to do, is right here. So I've got ID, section ID, and available ingredient ID. And I've also got a table that has available ingredients. Now I've already seeded that table. Extra cheese, onions, green peppers. By the way, if the code is too small in the back, raise your hand with a fist, and that will tell me that I need to boost my font. Okay, that'll just let me know. I walked back there and looked at it, and it seemed okay. The SQL might not be okay. I could probably zoom in on that a little bit here in a second, but it's SQL. I'm just selecting records. All right, so here's our list of ingredients. Not too complicated. What I'm going to show you here is that I've got two projects in this solution. One of these projects is going to be my data access project right here, and the other one's going to be my website project, which is right here. The website project references the data access project. The data access project is going to be built with EF. What I'll do first is I'm going to open this models file up. I'm just going to shrink everything down and show you the models. So I've got a pizza order here. Pizza looks pretty much like the database. Got some foreign key things going on between a pizza and an order. Same thing with pizza and a section. Blah, blah, blah. Just a pretty simple data model. And now I've got this pizza site data context that inherits from DB context, a wonderful EF class that makes life easy for us. And I've just got a couple of DB sets. Not a very complicated EF model, not a very complicated demo. All right? On top of that, I've got some migrations set up. I want to show you how I seeded that data. In my seed method of my migration file, I'm basically just adding in a bunch of ingredients. Okay, so I want to show you there's no magic here. I actually generated the database about 37 times using, you know, Entity Framework migrations and this actual seed method right here. Okay, so that's the deal with that. Now, I've also got, and the UI for this website is going to be pretty simple. We're going to be making random pizza orders. Okay, so I'm going to show you what that logic looks like here in just a second. Let me shrink everything down. You'll see that I've got this index method. And right here in my demo one guy, I'm going to be accessing the database directly from my website. So I've just slapped a DB context entity right there in my controller, and I'm ready to party. And I've got this method here, index. And I've also got this method here. It's my action method called sample order. I'm just going to show you what I'm doing here just so you kind of have a run of it, because we're going to be ordering a lot of random pizzas today and deleting data from the database repetitively. So what I want to show you here is that I'm just getting back a list of all the ingredients. I'm newing up a pizza order, setting the order date temp to now. And then I'm just going to iterate over however many of those orders that I've got, do a random, add some random toppings to my pizza, add some random sections to it. I'm only going to go to two sections, so it's not going to be like divided into quads or anything like that. And then I'm just going to save the order to the database and do a save changes. Not complicated. And I'll show you what it looks like real quick. It's literally a button. It's not a very exciting front end, but that's when you go to the web API talk, is to see all the front end stuff, the SPA stuff. This is really for the middleware folks in the room. So I'm just going to run this real quick, and you're going to see one button on the screen that's going to say generate random order. So real quickly, I'll do my Doug Henning impression and show you that there's nothing in the database. Just kind of show you that this is working. Bless you. Let this site spin up real quick. Or maybe not real quick. Kind of quick. Maybe I've got it. There we go. So fire off a sample order. Again, really not that complicated. I'll just click send here. What that's going to do is it's going to run through that random algorithm, generate me a random pizza, and save it to the database. So what I'm going to do right now is just run this. Okay. So you can see here that I've got kind of my snapshot view up at the top. And then down below, I've got all my pizza, and I'm not really subtracting anything from my inventory here. We'll get to that, I promise. And if I were to do it again, I might get four or five pizzas on this order. Oh, so there we go. Multiple pizzas. So really not that complicated, just generating some pizza here. Hopefully by the end of this demo, you'll be starving for pizza. It'll be a good thing. All right. So that's our pretty simple demo, and that's really just to kind of set the stage, to show you what we're doing here. We've got a website. We want to let people order pizzas. Luckily, we'll have a lot of people that want to order pizzas. That's also unlucky for the developers, because now they're going to have to come up with all these additional tiers to make sure that people can order pizza, I don't know, on Super Bowl Sunday, right, when lots of people want to order pizza, or during the NBA Finals, which I guess is slightly more appropriate for the time. So I want to go back to this guy real quick. So JoJo's Pizza goes out, or rather Enterprise Pizza goes out. That's the name of the demo, Enterprise Pizza. Get it? Enterprise environment, Enterprise Pizza. We're building the enterprise. So we basically start getting our orders, and we start to see, well, the site's kind of slow, especially whenever like there's a big sporting event. People are kind of chugging out. Orders are dying. We're not getting them in the database. We're kind of having a problem. So we need to implement some form of middle tier. Good thing is Windows Azure provides that. We're going to have to change our architecture just a little bit. We've already got our data layer in this nice, handy little package that I can reference from some other project, probably like a cloud service. So what I'm going to do in this case is, instead of just sending the orders right to the database, whenever somebody submits an order, I'm going to serialize that order into a big blob of JSON. I'm going to send that JSON blob up into a Windows Azure storage queue. And I'm going to have a worker process, a worker role, for those of you that have played with Azure in the past. Anybody built a worker role or a web role or played with cloud services at all? Okay. Seriously? Anybody else? Don't be scared. Okay. Good to know. So that worker role is going to pull the data from the queue and process it, and then it's going to store it in the database. So rather than just go from website to the database, I'm going to add a middle tier. Does this sound familiar to anybody? Anybody had to do this before? IQing, middle tiers, MSMQ, something like that? Okay. We're going to do something very similar to that. We're going to add a middle tier to this application using cloud services. Now, don't panic yet. I'm just showing you that we can do this. The title of this session is on-premise. I want my website in the cloud. I want my middle tier on-premise. We'll get to that in the next slide, I promise. But for now, what I want to do is just show you that a worker role can really help you solve that problem. So I want to open up this guy, and the solution will be a little bit larger, because I'm going to have a Windows Azure Cloud project in there, and I'm going to have a Windows Azure Worker Role project that kind of goes up into the cloud whenever I do that, and I'm also going to begin to kind of pull out some infrastructural components right here, some reuse stuff that I'm going to have to do in a lot of different places. So let me actually start with that reusable area. I'm going to open up my infrastructure guy right here. You'll see that I've got one class in here called Storage Queue Helper. Okay. I'm not going to go directly against the queue code for the purpose of this demo. I'm going to give you this, and then I'm going to give you all this code later on. If you just keep checking my Twitter handle or my blog, I'm going to eventually, probably the next day or two, have to take out the connection strings and all that good stuff. I'm going to put this code online. I'll probably use GitHub for it. I might use CodePlex for it. Not sure yet, but I'm going to make this code available to you so that when you want to do things like get started using Windows Azure Queues, you don't want to have to go through some of the gobbledygook and learn how the entire thing works, which I would recommend that you do. But if you just want to get started and get partying on it right away, it's nice to have little helper classes, right? I'm a big fan of fluent coding. Anybody else like fluent coding? jQuery is a good example of that. Right. So what I do is I like to write little helper classes that take the, repetitiveness out of some of the work that I have to do on a regular basis. One of the things that I do quite regularly is use Azure Storage Queues. So what you'll see here is that I've got this class called Storage Queue Helper. It probably ought to have a private constructor so that nobody could just new it up. I didn't do that yet. But what I've got here is a static method called OpenQueue. I just pass it a queue name. And in this guy, what I'm going to do first is I'm going to parse an app setting called storage account. And right now that's going to be pointing at my local storage emulator running right here on my computer, which you get when you install the Windows Azure tools using the web platform installer. Okay, so I do want to point out that you can do all this locally and then push it up and party. So I'm going to get the connection string or get the account basically from an account connection string that I'm going to have in my config file. And just to show you what that looks like right now, since I'm running locally, that's what my config setting looks like. I'm just going to use the development storage account, which is just use development storage equals true. It's kind of like the local host of storage queues, or Windows Azure Storage in general. So that's where I'm going to be reading that from. And then I'm going to create a queue client. And I'm going to get a reference to a queue, which is just like a box in which I'm going to throw stuff. And then I'm going to call this method, which just says, hey, if it's not there, create it. Anybody ever work with MSMQ? Wouldn't it have been nice if it was this easy? This is great, huh? The first time I saw this, I remember thinking, man, that's kind of what I thought MSMQ would work like, or IBM MQ series, or some of the other products that are out there to do queuing. When I saw the way we could do it with this, I was so excited, because it's just so much easier. It just works well. So I'm going to do all this stuff, which basically just sets up my queue account. And then I'm going to return an instance of that object, and I'm going to set the queue property. And then I'm going to have two pretty simple methods in here, NQ and DQ. With NQ, look at that. That's complicated, huh? Q.addMessage. And I'm just going to pass it the string, which I know is going to be a serialized version of stuff. And I've also got a DQ method. And this DQ method is going to take a action of type CloudQueueMessage. And that's really my handler. So what I'm going to do is basically NQ something, and I'm going to tell it whenever you DQ it, I want you to do this. I want you to do this work so that I can reuse this class in lots of other places, such as my website and my worker role. That way I don't have to duplicate that code in two places. What happens when you have to duplicate code in two places? You have two things you have to go fix. So I just put it into one little helper class. All right. Again, that helper class is not necessarily a recommendation. I mean, the implementation of that helper class, I would always recommend that you use helper classes. That particular helper class is not necessarily a recommendation. It's really just for demo purposes and to help you kind of get started playing with queues without having to learn some of the guts. I like to give that stuff out. So what I'm going to do in my home controller that's slightly different now, I'm still newing up this guy, still newing up an instance of my enterprise pizza data context, because I have to get one very important piece of information to show the user. What do you think it is? the ingredients. I'm going to have to show the user what they can order. That's really the only table that I need on the website's front end, because that's the only piece of data that I need to show people to get them to be able to order pizzas once I take all the ordering processing out of the website's context, like I'm about to do right now. So in this guy, I've actually refactored this a little bit so that now I've got this create random order. You've already seen the code for that, so I'll walk through it again. And there is our action result, which is what we're going to hit when we load up that MVC view. Sample order. I'm going to create that random order. And then I'm actually going to use newtonsoft.json to serialize that order into a JSON string. Okay? Anybody else use newtonsoft.json? JSON.net? It's probably one of the most popular NuGet packages. More importantly, does anybody use NuGet? Okay, good. Good. Like that. NuGet is love. Just going to go and point that out. It's like the greatest thing to be introduced to .NET in years. And then down here, I'm going to get an instance of my storage queue helper by calling that static open queue method. I'm going to call NQ on it. And when I call NQ, that order is going to land directly into my queue. All right? To show you what that looks like, I'm going to open up this tool here and forgive the warning. I haven't authorized it yet. I do have a key for it. Just haven't put the key in yet because I'm busy and lazy. But this is a great little product called Cloud Storage Studio. It was originally made by Sarah Brada. I think they're owned by Redgate now. I'm not exactly sure. But I'm just going to pull this up real quick. You could actually look at your queues and your tables directly inside of Visual Studio if you wanted to. I'm just accustomed to using this tool, so I always open this up again. And I'm going to go right here into my dev storage account, and I'm going to pull up this queues folder here. You'll see that I've got incoming orders. Maybe I don't have incoming orders. Maybe I don't. I thought I had orders in there. Maybe I don't. What I'm going to do is I'm going to delete that queue. So I'm going to recreate it here in just a second. So I thought I had orders in it, but I guess it doesn't. And now what I'm going to show you is that I've got this worker role here, and I've got this cloud project. And what I'm doing in this cloud project is I'm really just saying I've got one role, and that role is my worker role. And the role of that worker role is to continually watch that queue for messages. And whenever you get one, dequeue it and do something with it. So that's when we get into the dequeue method of that helper class that I just showed you. And there's no code in this cloud project. It's really just to help you get the worker role out into Windows Azure. And what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to open this guy up, and I'm going to show you kind of what the meat of it is. Nothing really in my onStart method, but I've got a run method here. Anybody ever written a Windows service, for those of you that haven't written a worker role? Worker role is kind of like a Windows service, but it doesn't run on your computer. It runs on the cloud. Okay? It runs in the cloud on one or more instances, depending on what your load looks like, what your needs are. And it's pretty easy for you to scale that up. You can actually add instances using the portal. Just slide the slider, and you can go from one to however many instances and increase your throughput. So I've got this run method, which is really just a continuous loop. And in my method, I'm just going to call while true. True is always going to be true. And I'm going to open that queue, and I'm going to pass it this lambda function right here, or lambdas, depending on how correct I am on this one. And that's really just going to say, whenever you get a message, I want you to pass that message. That's the pass greater than, equals greater than. I want you to pass that message into this particular set of functionality, which I then want you to run. And what I'm doing in this guy is I've actually got another, maybe I don't. I thought I had another project. No, I don't. What I've got now is just deserializing that JSON that I get off my message, which I'm just going to call as string on my message. That's just going to give me back my entire queued message as one big fat string. Then I want to deserialize using JSON.NET again. Thank goodness for JSON.NET. Sorry. It's a new clean machine. I haven't enabled everything yet. I'm going to get that message back as a string, deserialize it, and then just like I was doing in the website before, I'm going to new up an instance of my Enterprise Pizza data context. I'm going to add that order to the database, and I'm going to save the changes. And then I'm actually just going to write something out to the trace window so we can actually see that it's doing some work in the trace window here in just a moment. All right. So what I'll do now is I'm actually going to go ahead and right-click on my cloud project. I'm going to say start new instance. I could have hit F5 if that was my startup project, but it's not, so I'm just going to do it the old-fashioned way. That's going to fire up my Windows Azure Compute emulator, which you'll see right here. Oh, I see what I did wrong. Sorry about that. Let me show you a little trick here. What I did in that particular situation, I double-clicked on a solution file to open it up in Visual Studio. My icon on my taskbar is marked as run as admin every time I click it because I frequently use the Windows Azure tools. Since I double-clicked that solution and it opened up in Visual Studio, Visual Studio started up in non-admin mode. Okay, it's not a bug, it's a feature. Okay. There's got to be some low-level way in Windows that I can say always, always, always run, not just when I click on the icon. I'm a web guy, I just don't know how to do that. So. We have one of our illustrious engineers in the room who could probably help me with that at one point, but I'll bug him on that offline. So I'm going to do that again. Debug, start new instance, and hopefully I'm running as admin now. And I'm going to go ahead and once my computer emulator starts up, I'm just going to open it up so you can kind of see what that looks like. There it goes, starting up. I'm going to right-click that icon and do Show Compute Emulator UI. It's really not that great. It's kind of like looking at a console window or a trace output. And once it deploys my service into the compute emulator, you're going to see that tree view node kind of pop up there with my worker role running. There we go. So there's my worker role. You'll see there it is, running away. Not really doing a whole bunch, just throwing out some diagnostics information right there. And you'll see that I've got this in my delegate that I'm passing, that DQ method. You'll see that I've got a trace.writeline, and I'm just going to say how many pizzas you've ordered. Okay, it's really just to kind of show you how to get all this stuff glued together. All right, so there it is. It's all running. Everything is cool. I'm going to clear those logs real quick, and I'm going to right-click my website, and I'm going to say debug, start new instance. And that's actually just going to launch my website directly on my computer again. And this time, the website will not be saving orders to the database. The website will be sending those orders into my storage queue, so that my worker role, my middle tier, can process it directly out of that queue. Okay, so let me get this so we can see everything. I should use my Windows features. All right, so that's going to spin up my website here. And you'll see that as the loop happens, I'm just like writing out working, 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 just to let myself know that my worker role is indeed functioning and just kind of cruising along, waiting for orders to come into that queue. I'm going to clear this out again. IIS is starting up slow for me today. I'm not sure why. No jokes, please. So I'll send this off again. And that's going to drop that message into the queue. And you'll see in just a second that the worker role is going to pick it up, and it's going to do a trace write line right out to the console here. I'll zoom in on this guy so you can see it. Hopefully I'm listening on the right queue. Now you will see a little bit of a lag time between the operation actually happening and the trace writing it out inside of the compute emulator. You will see a little bit of a delay there from time to time. It is still happening. Maybe I'm locking it up or something. Let me look in here. There's our incoming orders queue. See that we actually created that queue container, or that queue. Let me see if I've got it done. There we go. So order number 64 was just taken, and somebody ordered 3 pizzas. Okay, just to show you that that data is indeed in the database. There we go. Is that cool? So we've just added a middle tier to this website. And just a few lines of code, most of which are actually going to be reused by that website itself. So that's the guy just set up as a cloud service. And what I'm going to do now, go back into my deck real quick, and I'm going to get to the meat and potatoes of this entire talk. That's great, Brady. I know that Windows Azure has this thing called cloud services, and I can do a middle tier. But I have regulations in my organization that says that all that processing I have to do in my on-prem environment. Can you help me or not? Well, I wouldn't be here if I couldn't help you. So what we're going to do is we're going to change this up a little bit. It still says worker, but you can kind of consider that a worker EXE, Windows service, whatever the case may be. Now, I'm still going to be sending messages into my storage queue from my Windows Azure website, but since I've got that storage API, I can actually reach out to the cloud and subscribe to that storage queue and receive messages from it. So I can receive those messages in my on-premise environment from the cloud whenever they come in. I'll show you how to do that right now after that thing quits spinning. Does that remind anybody of MTS? Am I showing my age here? Should have made it a little green ball. All right, so what I'll do here is I'm going to go ahead and open up demo 3 by not double-clicking on the solution icon. All right. And you'll see that I've taken a couple of projects out of the solution. I have removed my cloud service project from my solution, and I have removed my worker role project from my solution, because now I'm going to move all of that processing onto the on-prem environment. So I'm going to displace everything into my on-prem environment. All right, and let me kind of show you what that looks like. So I've got my infrastructure code here. It's exactly the same as it was before. Open the queue, look at the app settings, get the storage account out, party. Same thing in the website. Haven't changed any code there. But what's different is I have this tiny little console application, just a little bitty exe, right here in my solution. You can imagine that as like a Windows service or a big fat exe or some sort of a monitoring app. Wink, wink. We'll get to that in a second. Some sort of a monitoring app. People can actually see the orders coming in directly from the cloud. Just like before, I've got my app config. And there's my storage account app setting, just like before, where I'm pointing at my local storage account. I'm going to be looking at my local queues. All you need to do to make that work in Azure is to change that so that it actually points out to your online storage account, which I can show you what it looks like here in just a second if you want. And then I'm going to open up my program.cs. Guess what? You've probably already seen most of this code, too. It's exactly the same code as I had in my worker role. I literally copied and pasted it right into this code. Okay? So right here, you'll see that I've got storage queue helper, open the queue, dequeue the message. Once I get the message, I want you to do this with it. Pretty much exactly the same thing as I showed you before. I'm going to get the message as a string. It's going to be a JSON string. I'm going to deserialize that message into a pizza order. Then I'm going to save that pizza order into my database. Now, if I deployed this to Azure, what would be really neat here is I would be running this site in Azure and running my little exe right here on my computer, and the message is going to go up into the cloud and come back down and land on my computer. I was afraid of the network god, so I was going to run this locally again, but I did it earlier in the speaker room, and it worked just fine. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to hit F5 and run my little exe. By the way, that's the last time that I actually have to start up Studio as admin, because I'm not going to be using any of the Azure projects for the rest of this demo, because this is when we get into the on-prem part. And you're going to see here that it's going to spin up, and it's going to just say kind of the same thing, working, 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 waiting for you. Okay? Again, do my Doug Henning impression, show you that there are no pieces in the database. Go over here to my website, do a debug, start a new instance, and just to show you that everything is indeed going to work exactly the same way, I'm going to go ahead and open that console window up so you can see it over here. I'm going to minimize that. Go over to this. All right. Take care. So this is going to pop up here in a second. I'm just going to submit another random order. And what you're going to see come in just a second is just going to pop up in the screen here. It's going to write out that I've gotten the order. See, they left before the good part. You're going to go out and you're going to be like, dude, you should have stayed. You should have stayed. Because Brady showed Signal R. Anybody seen Signal R yet? Nobody seen Signal R? Dang. Okay, you got to play with Signal R. I'm going to show you a really dirt simple Signal R example today, but I encourage you to go take a peek at Signal R. It's real time on the web. So I hit send right here. That's going to send that message into the queue again. And every 10 seconds, this guy is going to wake up, look at the queue, see if I have any messages, and pull them out and try and process them for me. You'll see I've got my sample orders already gone through there. Working, working, working. Did I get one? Yep. Order 65 was just taken with 4 pizzas. I'll go right here again. Fire it off again. Fire it off again. Fire it off again. See there? You like that? Is that cool? So imagine this website running up in Windows Azure websites and the EXE running on your laptop. Okay? All you have to do is deploy it and it'll fly. I have to change the connection string and go to a storage account that's running up in Azure, but it'll work. All right, so I'm going to close this. to show you again, no magic. We do have pizzas. Now we don't. Okay? I'm going to go ahead and close this guy down. Close down this guy one more time. And go back to my deck. As promised, this is when it gets kind of interesting. This is when we start to talk about the Windows Azure Service Bus. Has anybody played with Service Bus yet? What have you used? Topics? Topics and queues? Okay. Same? Okay. Anybody else? Anybody use relays yet? Okay, cool. That's good. I'm going to show you something new today. So first thing I want to show you is topics. You guys know what PubSub is, right? Publish, subscribe. That's pretty much what a topic is. You're going to publish a message into a topic, and you're going to have an application that's listening on that topic, and whenever a message gets up into it, it's going to pull it back down. The nice thing about the way about topic subscriptions work over queues is that you can actually set up things that are basically like clauses, like I want you to take an order whenever there's pepperoni and throw it over here, whenever it's anchovies, I want you to take it and throw it over there. So you can actually set up service bus topic subscriptions that do things in different ways based on the way they're getting that in, and the syntax for it is SQL. You can actually write like when this, go here. It's pretty cool. So website's going to send a message up into the service bus topic. On my corporate network, I've got an application that has subscribed to that service bus topic, and whenever the topic gets a message, it's going to get that message back down. Now, the nice thing about this, if you saw that code before where I have the while true, probably made your hair stand on end, you don't have to worry about that anymore. There's none of that while true stuff. None of that old queuing stuff. You don't have to set up a loop. Service bus kind of has some syntax that'll make that easy for you. And then the on-premise application is going to display a message. Okay? So as soon as the service bus gets a message into that topic, it's going to take the message off that topic. Anybody that has subscribed to that message is going to get it, and it's going to do whatever work it needs to do. So here's our demo, subscribing to a service bus topic using on-premise apps. Now let me set this up for you. You're in the pizza shop, and you know that the corporate office is listening to the queues, and you know that whenever they're listening to the queues, they're getting messages out of those queues, and they're saving the order history into the master database, and that's all well and good. But you work in the pizza shop, and it doesn't really help you that much because nobody's telling you what to do. Nobody's giving you any information. Now, if you think about the logical flow that you would want to do all this in, you'd want to get the order, process the credit card, figure out if the address is real, and then save the order, and then let the store know. You don't want to let the store know before you've billed the customer for their pizza, right? That would be bad. Now you're giving away pizzas. Which I think Peyton Manning did a couple years ago. So now we're going to kind of extend this sample a little bit. I've got an additional project in here. And this project is going to be enterprisepizza.servicecontracts. See right here? And I've got really one class in there. Probably going to add some classes here in a moment when we get into relays. The class that I've got in there is called the Order Billboard View Model. So I'm in the store. I've got this application sitting in front of me, and whenever somebody submits an order to my store, I want to see on this display what pizzas it is that have been ordered by that customer. So I need to know what I'm going to be making. So what I'm doing in this particular class, you guys know the concept of a DTO and a view model, right? So I've got a data transfer object, that's my entity framework entity. I've got a view model that basically is my language that's going to have kind of a shared language between all the different tiers of my application. This is the beginning of that shared domain language. And it's really just a mimic of the data model itself, kind of simplified without things like IDs and whatever else. So you can see that I've got section item in here and pizza item in here. Not very complicated. Looks very similar in nature to the data model that we have in the database, but simplified somewhat so that I can actually display it more easily on like a desktop application. Okay? So I've got my service contracts guy right here. And I've also got this new project in here called an order billboard. All right? Before I get into the order billboard, I'm going to show you one change that we've actually made in this internal worker app project, but before I do, I've got to open up this infrastructure guide because I've got two new classes that I've added in this guide. So you've already seen the storage queue helper, which I've got right here. This guy right here. I've also got this subscription initializer, which I'm going to show you real quick and then get rid of, because it's got my service bus key in it. But you'll see it's got issuer key, and namespace. And I'm going to close it. I was very careful to make sure nobody had their phones out for that one. But I'll be deleting that service bus topic after this demo so that nobody can watch the video and play with it. And the reason I'm showing you that class is really it's just a pretty simple helper class. It's just going to return all the pieces of data that I'm going to need to reach out to the cloud and make a connection with the service bus. It's basically your username, your password, and your key. So those are the three pieces of information that I'm going to need there. And I've also got another helper class here, which is my service bus topic helper. And this guy right here, this subscription initializer, it's got one method in it that's going to return this. Those are the three bits of information that I need to basically open up a connection to the service bus. Now, when Clemens Vasters sees this, he's going to freak out because there's a new way of doing this. It's called, guess what? A connection string. There's actually an easier way to do this, but I just kind of fell into my old habits. I've been using service bus for about a year and a half now, and this is the way I've always kind of done things, so I just, stuck to what I knew. And I won't really go too deep through this service bus topic helper class, but what I'm going to show you is kind of what it does, and the theory of it should look sort of similar to that queue helper that I've got with the whole NQ, DQ, and pass it a delegate. I'm going to new one up. I'm going to set up my service bus environment, and when I do that, I'm basically just going to, get my namespace, get my service URI, get my owner, my key, and all that good stuff. This guy is going to return. Setup method is going to take an instance of that initialization request, and it's going to hand me back an instance of this class. Pardon me, I'm sorry. It's going to hand me back an instance of this class. Now, I've really got two important methods in this guy. Subscribe and publish. And I'm just passing it a type of T. Again, I wouldn't necessarily recommend that you use this in production code. I have a friend that's using this class in a startup that he's doing, and he says it's doing pretty well. But it's sort of making some assumptions. The assumption is you're getting started with Service Bus. Okay, so that's kind of the assumption that this class makes, or you're lazy like me. And just to show you what this looks like, in my publish method, I just call setup service bus environment just to get everything ready. I'm going to dynamically create a topic name based on the type of object that you're throwing me. Again, making some assumptions there, but it's fair. And then I'm going to create a topic client, and I'm going to send a message, a brokered message actually, a service bus brokered message, into that topic. And if I shrink this code down again, that's the publish side, and if I show you the subscribe side, what you're going to see is that I'm kind of doing the same thing, just setting up the service bus environment, getting the connection information to it. I'm creating the topic if for whatever reason it doesn't already exist. And then right here, I'm basically just going to start listening to that topic and waiting for messages to come in. Let me do this real quick. And I'll open up this method. And begin really is just the method that I call to just begin watching the service bus topic and waiting for messages to come into that topic. And as soon as they come in, I grab them. And what it's doing right here is it's saying begin receive, wants you to wait 5 minutes, then I want you to begin receive again. I know I'm probably going to get an order once every 5 minutes. And if I don't, I want you to just start listing again. Not too bad. All right? That's my service bus helper guy. Now, I'm not really going to be changing a whole lot the manner in which I'm taking orders. The reason that I'm implementing the service bus now is that Enterprise Pizza has multiple locations. So what I'm going to want to do is whenever I get an order, I'm going to want to send a message up into the service bus that I want to eventually get to one of those locations to tell the people that work in that pizza parlor which pizzas they're supposed to make. Does that make sense? I've only got one store right now, but the implication exists that I'll have multiple. All right? So if I open that order billboard up, it's really not that great a UI, but I want to show you the code for it. Now, when the application starts up, when the guy loads up, I'm going to new up an instance of my view model. My view model is what I'm going to use to bind everything in my XAML to the data. That's what I'm just going to show you everything with. And right here, you'll see that I'm calling my service bus topic helper setup method. And I'm telling it, I want you to subscribe and expect that what you're going to get is an order item. That's one of my view models. So basically, start listening. What I think you're going to get whenever you get something, it's going to be an order item. And whenever you get an order item, I want you to take that order item and do this with it. I want you to call add order to view. Not too complicated, huh? Now, I've got this in dispatcher.invoke right here. I'll tell you why. That code isn't really the important code. This code is the important code. Anybody tell me why I got to do this? Yeah. He said because it's on a different thread. Anybody ever done Windows Forms code or XAML code, and you do something that takes a second or two or nine to run, and when it comes back, you want to update your GUI, and it goes, ah, you shall not pass. It says, I cannot update the UI because you're calling it from a different thread. This is the way you mitigate that. You just call dispatcher.begin, dispatcher.invoke async. In Windows RT code, it would be begin invoke, I think. And in Windows Phone code, I also think it's begin invoke or begin. It's very similar in syntactical nature. So I'm just going to basically new that stuff up and show it in the GUI. So the first thing I'm going to do here is right-click this guy, say start new instance, and that's going to start up our on-prem order reception app that's going to be waiting for orders to come into the queue. I need to shrink it a little bit. Sorry about that. Shrink my worker role right here. And now I'm going to right-click my website, because it'll take a second to spin up. Just say debug, start new instance. That's going to start up our website again. All right, there it comes. And now I'm going to right-click this order billboard, and I'm going to say debug, start new instance. Now, yeah, this seems a little bit complicated, but you know what? So is enterprise development. How many of you have had to do something like this? One message comes in, it needs to go to 15 different places to satisfy 30 different apps. Anybody had to do this before in any context at all? The rest of you aren't listening. So there's my little app running. It's basically waiting for the service bus to get some messages. I'm going to put this right here. Now I'm going to go into my web app, which is taking a second to spin up. If it was in websites, it'd be like that. Right? Once that spins up, I'm going to submit us a random order. The first thing you're going to see is that random order is going to come in right here. And what I'm going to show you in this code, I forgot to show you this one line, is I'm doing all the same stuff that I've always done, but I've got this new order here, send order to store display. So once I process the order and bill the customer, I want you to send that order to the store display. And basically what I'm doing is I'm converting my pizza order, which is my DTO, into my view model domain language. So it's really just like mapping class A to class B. That's really all that work, and the only work that's really relevant to the service bus is right there, because I wrote that service bus topic helper class. So now all I need to do is call setup and then publish. I want you to publish that order item up into the service bus. Let whoever's listening deal with it. All right, so I'll go back over here to my web app. I'm going to fire off a sample order. Before I do, I'm going to scroll down so you can see something happen. I'll fire up a sample order right here. And that order is going to come into this app first, because the queue is going to get the queued message is going to get picked up by the worker app. The worker app's just going to let us know that the order's been placed and save it to the database. Need to change that listener a little bit, tune it up. So there we go. And look at there. So this guy queued a message. This guy pulled the message off the queue, processed it, and then called a service bus topic, or threw another message into a service bus topic that another application or an application in multiple stores happens to be listening on. Now, I couldn't do round stuff in XAML. It was kind of killing me. So forgive my graphic inability here, but just imagine the beige is the dough, the red is the sauce. Just go with me, please. So I'll just do it again here. Fire off sample order, fire off another sample order, fire off another sample order, boom, boom, boom. So now I've got orders coming in. Is that kind of neat? Groovy, you like that? All right. I'm going to close this down real quick, and I promise I want to have plenty of time for questions at the end, if you have any. We will get to that. All right. This is when it gets really interesting. Service bus relays. You want to send messages between tiers with the service bus. Anybody ever done any WCF code? Yeah, it scared me too. Okay. You use WCF with service bus relays. WCF is never going to go anywhere. WebAPI is awesome. I'm doing a talk on WebAPI on Thursday, but I've done so much WCF in my life. Like, I love it. The configuration is a little difficult at times. Once you learn it, you're pretty good. But the nice thing about service bus and WCF is that what you can do is you can say, my endpoint is in the service bus. My endpoint for my service, which is right here, is in the service bus. So when messages hit the service bus, it's going to relay those messages back to whatever's listening for them. A little graphic to kind of show you how that works. When the website starts up, it's going to host a WCF service, and it's going to use the, I think, NetTCP relay binding. That relay is a keyword. Relay tells you it's going to be the service bus relay binding. It's going to use that. The on-premise app is going to start up, and it's not going to host, that's a typo, it's not going to host a WCF service, but it's going to basically reach out and look at one. The website is going to send a message to that WCF service, and that message is going to then be relayed to that on-prem app, and then the on-prem app is going to do its functionality. It's going to send a message back up to the service bus, and that message is then going to be relayed back over to the website. You kind of see what this does here? You don't have to worry about writing an exe or a service or something like that to host your WCF service. You can host your WCF service as a service bus relay. Okay? And that's when we get really powerful. So now we're going to talk about relaying events to the website using service bus. And that's correct. I'm actually going to be relaying the events up to the site itself because the site is where the WCF service is going to be running. So this service contracts guy that I mentioned earlier, now we're starting to add stuff to it. Now I've got a service interface in here called iOrderStatusService. Okay? I've also got an order status request. I'm one of those people that really has this belief that if you have one parameter in a method, you probably will eventually have two and three and 17. So you should just build an object that's kind of a request object to call that method. My personal rule of thumb is two parameters. Once I add a second parameter to the method, I make a class that represents the way in which I intend to call that method. Again, not a recommendation. Just a way of doing things. Now, anybody not familiar with the service contract, operation contract attributes? Anybody not seen that before? I saw a lot of hands go up with WCF, so I assume you kind of know what that is. I'm basically just saying this particular interface is going to be a WCF service. Okay? Now I'm going to go over to my website here, and I've added a folder to my website called Infrastructure, and in it, I've got an order status service class. I didn't see a lot of hands go up when I asked a lot of people if they'd ever used SignalR, but what I can tell you about SignalR in 5 seconds or less, and you should totally go see a demonstration by either Damian Edwards, Scott Hanselman, or myself on SignalR because we get really animated and we do a lot of cool demos. But SignalR is basically real time over HTTP. Okay? What I'm going to do is on the server side, now this global host guy, this is a part of SignalR. You'll see right here, I've got Microsoft ASP.NET SignalR Globalhost. What I'm doing is I'm looking at the connection manager for that global host, and I'm getting the context of a hub, and the SignalR hub is kind of the cornerstone of SignalR coding. And I'll show you what this hub looks like right here. Again, a deep dive on a SignalR is kind of outside the scope of this conversation. But this is our hub. And I'm just saying listen for updates, and this groups.add connection ID and client ID, really what I'm saying there is whenever you order a pizza from me, whenever you order a pizza from Enterprise Pizza, I'm kind of the impression that you're going to want to know the status of your order. So I'm going to tell the website what the status of your order is as the person in the pizza parlor makes your pizza and goes through each step of the way. Now, there are some vendors out there that do that already. kind of what the idea was inspired by. But the way that I'm going to be able to do that, to send those messages up into my HTML page, is using SignalR. And this is my SignalR hub. If I were to open up my sample order page right here, my view, we'll see that I'm going to do a couple of things in this. I'm going to include jQuery. I'm also going to include the jQuery SignalR plugin. Now, the first thing that my page is going to do is it's going to open up a SignalR connection back to the server, and it's going to create what's called a hub proxy, which is really just a proxy for this class. And you'll see that right here I've called it order status, and right here I've also called it order status. If I didn't want to use that attribute, I would basically have to take this class name and put it right there. But I am using that attribute because I'm a little obsessive about my hub names, so I really don't want to tell people what my class name is. If they wanted to look at the JavaScript, they could probably figure it out. But I'm just going to give it a name that's logical to me. And this on method right here, remember we talked about pub sub with service bus? SignalR is like poor man's pub sub. So I've got hub.on. Whenever this event happens, or whenever the server calls this method, let me let that sink in for a second. Whenever the server calls the method on the client, that is how it's going to work. And you'll see right here that I'm calling groups.add, listen for updates. I do call it at some point or another. Actually, you don't even need to put that code into your hub, so I'm going to be calling it from somewhere else. I'm calling it from right here. You'll see that I've got status updated. I can show you this real quick. Clients is a SignalR guy. And if I do clients dot, where is it? I'll just put my period right here. You'll see that group is a dynamic expression. That's one of the nice things about SignalR. It's a pretty dynamic framework. And I can basically just tell it methods that my client is going to expect to get called, because my client is going to know what to do with it. So I can just basically party. So on my server side, I've got a method that I'm going to be calling called status updated. And in my client side code, I've got hub.on status updated. Whenever the server tells me to do that, I'm going to run this code. Again, this is a SignalR thing. This is not an on-prem thing, not a service bus thing. I highly encourage you to take a peek at SignalR. It is, like, I'll go ahead and say this. I'm an Azure evangelist, but SignalR is my favorite technology. I absolutely love it. And I love to put the two together. Azure websites and SignalR are really, really awesome together. The last step in this process is to call the connections start method. And when it's done, because we're using jQuery promises here, when it's done, I'm going to run this function right here, which is going to invoke listen for updates. So the page is going to load. Once the HTML is loaded and all my JavaScripts are loaded, I'm going to reach back out to the server and create a real-time connection to my SignalR hub. Whenever a message is relayed back over to my website from the service bus, the service implementation that's actually going to do the work is going to call my SignalR hub, which is going to basically update the UI and show the user what the status of their pizza order is. That kind of makes sense? Just to show you how all that works, and that's really all the code that I've got. There is some configuration in here. If I scroll down right here, you're going to see that I've got the traditional service configuration for WCF, but I've also got these extensions, and these are the extensions that get automatically put into your config file whenever you pull down the Windows Azure.ServiceBus NuGet package. The NuGet gods do a wonderful job of just putting all that configuration in there for you. And these are really the relay extensions for the ServiceBus WCF bindings. And then I've got my services guy right here, and I'm just telling it, whenever somebody asks for an iOrder status service, I want you to use your order status service class, which lives in the infrastructure folder and namespace. Right? Now, in this case, I'm going to have to fire up the website first. The reason I have to fire up the website first is because the website is going to host that WCF service that it's going to basically put the binding into ServiceBus and tell ServiceBus, hey, people are going to send you messages. And when they send you messages, you relay them back to me. You relay them back to my side. If I were to go back out here to the portal and go into my service bus guy, Hopefully it hasn't happened yet. That way it'll be a nice little trick. I go into my tech ed demo guy and I click on relays right here. Relays can be created by using the Service Bus API only to create a relay. Click here and follow the instructions. I've already done that. Once my website spins up, I'm going to hit refresh in my portal browser. And you're going to see that relay that I just created in this website running right here on my computer or running up in Windows Azure websites. You're going to see that relay light up in the Service Bus panel in the portal. Okay? I hit F5 here. Hopefully. It's worked every other time I've done it. So. I'm optimistic, let's put it that way. All right. So that's going to spin up. Once that refreshes, you will see that relay pop up here. See, that's why I didn't want to do this over the internet. So everybody's tweeting and emailing and clogging the pipe. So there we go. See, there's my order status service. It's a relayed connection. That's the class that I just created in my website whenever my website started up. I'm basically just using service host in my global file, which I'll pull up right here for you. See that I've just got a normal WCF service host. I new up an instance of that service host, pass it an order status service, open it up, and whenever the application dies, I just close it again. That's why it takes a second or two for that to start up, because I'm actually creating that connection out the service bus, whereas I wasn't doing that in previous runs of the website. Okay? Now, the last thing that I'll do here, launch my worker app again. Debug, start new instance. This is the part that you're going to tell them they missed, and they're going to be all boo-hoo. Okay? I'm going to shrink this down a little bit. And the last step, obviously, is to run our order billboard. But this time, there's going to be a couple of changes to that order billboard. There's going to be a couple of pieces of input that the people that work in enterprise pizza parlors are going to be able to do. Specifically, they're going to be buttons that they can click whenever they get an order to tell the customer that made that order what the status of their pizza order is. So I'll click send here. If history repeats itself, it may take us a second to send that message into my local queue for some reason. So see, that says order submitted, waiting for status. Your order has been received by the store. Soon as the store gets the order, what do you think it's going to do? It's going to call the WCF service that I'm basically putting the endpoint in the service bus and hosting in my website. So as soon as they get the order in the store, I'm going to send a message up into the cloud and then back down again directly into my app right here. And I'll say the pizza has been prepared. See what happened? This is the magic spot right here. See what's going on? Is that neat? They're going to hate that they left, right? Okay. I'll close that down. Can we hold it till the end, please? Okay. So I've got 7 minutes left. Okay. So now the last thing that I'm going to do here is open up this last thing and show you this last piece of demo. Anybody ever heard of the concept of a data mart? Okay, here's the idea of a data mart. I've got an application running, I've got a website running in Windows Azure websites, and I only need a couple of pieces of data for that website to run. I don't need the huge big database that I've got in my enterprise pizza mainframe. Okay? So I only want to push out the data to my cloud environment that I need to drive my website. So now we're going in reverse. I've got a database, I've got an application that pulls data out of that database. That might be a huge terabyte database. I'm going to throw a message up into Service Bus. Service Bus is then going to call the WCF service that is hosted in my website, the endpoint of which is in Service Bus using relays. I'm going to call that WCF service on the website, and it's going to save data to the database that's now going to be available to the website. Does that make sense? You only push up the data that your website needs to run, especially when you've got some sort of situation like PCI compliancy or something like that, where you can't put the data anywhere but in-house, all right? Updating the website with on-premise data, updating the website data with on-premise apps,
Sorry.
Now, in this case, I'm just going to show you real quickly what I'm doing here. I've got another guy here called iInventory Service. It's also a WCF service. In my website, in the infrastructure folder, I've got a new guy right here, Inventory Service. It's going to have two methods on it. One of them is going to be toggle available. I'm really just saying, hey, is pepperoni in stock or not? If it's not in stock at your store and somebody wants to order pizza from your store, don't show them pepperoni on the website. Don't allow them to select it because we don't want them to order it. Okay? Thank you for the warning. And I've also got get ingredients list. Now, the nice thing about this is, at this point, the only place I really need to have the list of ingredients is in the SQL database that's hanging out in Windows Azure, because that's the only place I need to get it. Whenever an internal application wants to get the list of ingredients for whatever reason, it can actually call that WCF service that lives in my website that says, hey, give me back the list of ingredients that you know you can support. All right? So now what I'll do real quick, again, since I'm hosting, see there? See what happened? When I stopped the website, what happened? The relay vanished from the service bus panel in my portal. Now what I'll do is I'll right-click this guy again because it will take a second to start up because I'm going to be instantiating two WCF services and hosting those two WCF services directly in my website, placing the endpoint of those into the service bus so that we can relay messages back and forth through the service bus back and forth to either end of the pipe. Next thing I'm going to do here, fire up the worker app because we got to take the orders. Actually, really don't need to fire that up because we're not going to submit any orders this time. And we don't even really need the website because we're not going to be ordering anything. I just need those services to be running. And you see what happened? As soon as that website spun up, it created instances of my inventory service and my order status service and put those endpoints right up into the service bus for me so I can see that those relays exist. And the last thing here is I'm going to right-click this order billboard. I'm going to hit Start New Instance. And by the way, we have been queuing up data this entire time. See here? What I'm going to do now is, maybe, scroll. I'm going to show you the available ingredients. Here we go. So here's the list of available ingredients. And now I've got this app running right here where I've got a list of all the different ingredients that I can choose from. And I'm going to turn off onions. I'm going to turn off jalapenos and turn off pepperoni. And I'm going to run this again. And you'll see here that I have updated the inventory for those items using my WCF service that I'm relaying to through my website. There we go. So that's the end of the demos. Hopefully you're not exactly happy about that. And the last thing I want to show you real quickly is, I'm going to go to this next slide here. Maybe. I'm going to show you some related content. And these are other sessions that are going on this week that you might want to attend, or you have attended if they've already happened. You can find me at the web development booth. I kind of hang out over there and answer questions here and there about ASP.NET and Windows Azure websites and all other kinds of good stuff. I'll also be giving a web API session on Thursday, and that is going to be, it's not going to be like a spa demo, it's going to be web API for modern and mobile clients. So I'm going to show you how to use web API without having to use like jQuery and HTML, because chances are you probably look at web API as kind of like SOAP web services used to be, but you want to connect devices that aren't web pages to it. So I'm going to show you how to do that on Thursday. And I'm going to show you a couple track resources right here. And one of those is going to be this link, which goes to, why is Chrome opening? It is hijacked. I've got an article on my blog that kind of goes through some of the stuff that I've shown you here, connecting websites to Azure Service Bus. And I'll walk through some of the stuff that I've shown you in here, but it's not exactly as cool a demo as Enterprise Pizza. It's really just sending people up into the database. But I'm also using topics in this, so I've got a little diagram to kind of show you how to do it. But I wanted to point that out to you in case you wanted to take a peek and learn how to do more of this stuff. And then I've also got a couple of other links in this. One of them goes to the Windows Azure Training Kit, because we have a nice relay demo in there and a couple of other service bus demos and tons and tons and tons of websites demos. So I'd highly recommend you take a peek at that. just do a Bing search for Windows Azure Training Kit, and you'll get right to it. Or if you go to windowsazure.com and click on the documentation link, you'll see the Windows Azure Training Kit right there. And then we also have a Service Bus messaging hands-on lab from that training kit, so you can just go out to the training kit and get all that good stuff. We have 18 seconds left. That's the best timing I've had yet. Hope you guys enjoyed this talk. I hope to see you again this week. Take care.